Call the meeting of the Higher Education Finance Committee to order. First, I'd like to have a motion to approve the minutes from our Thursday, April 14th meeting. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Representative Eastland, thank you very much.
How do I?
Any questions? All those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes for Thursday, April 14th, say aye.
Aye.
Aye, opposed? Minutes are approved. We apologize for the temperature. I don't know if it's going to improve, maybe just with the course of action, it may go up a little bit. So. We only have one bill today, and that's House File 1385. At this time, I'd like to officially move House File 1385, and it would be moved to Ways and Means from here. I also would like to, at this time, move delete all amendments to DE3. And I incorporate an author's amendment into that, which is an A9 amendment that we perhaps have. A9. The A9 amendment just makes some adjustments that need to be corrected in the DE3 delete all amendment.
Mr. Chairman, is there a major difference between the DE3 and the bill that circulated to members the other day?
Primarily it's numbers, I think.
I think that's what this committee is all about, Mr. Chairman. Are the numbers going up or down?
They have changed. There's a fair amount of change from the original bill to the DE3. And,
I guess what I would be interested in, Mr. Chairman, are the significant changes in terms of the bottom line for each of the systems or ESO, or are they just primarily minor adjustments?
The bottom line doesn't change. There are adjustments, however, within Centers of Excellence. That number has increased from the original bill. And we also have the genomics partnership. That's $15 million back in our bill. It was not in the original bill. That's been added to it. I think those are the two major ones. Otherwise, it's...
So, Mr. Chairman, that when you say that $15 million was added to, then did our bottom line number go up by 15, or did that just... Was that a number that was just simply incorporated?
That's part of the university budget. That's the original allocation for them. We'll be able to answer more of those questions as we go through the bill. If that's satisfactory to you.
Yeah, that's fine, Mr. Chairman. I was just thinking it was a pretty major amendment. We had had that other bill earlier, which was a nice courtesy, and I thank you for that, and I just didn't know if that changed.
But some of the numbers have been going back and forth, and the partnership was one of the latest adjustments to our overall budget. Any other questions before we vote on the DE3 amendment? There we go.
Are you inviting people to respond?
At this point,
all these good people are here. I don't know.
I think they'll have a chance.
Okay.
A little later. Okay. There are no other questions. All those in favor of the DE3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's just adopted. At this point, Novak will be taking us on a trip through the bill. And, can you walk through our bill for us?
Mr. Chairman, I can go through the language parts of the bill. It might be appropriate for Mr. Berg to go through the Article 1 appropriations before I do the language part.
Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chair, members, I'll actually, rather than working up the DD3 amendment, I'll just make summarize off of the spreadsheet you have in front of you. It's a legal size document, which is dated 4/19/05. And the post option A and option B columns reflect the numbers that are in the chair's amendment. There is a previous version that was issued last week that is currently posted on the House website, which is now out of date. I will try to highlight the changes as we go through. They're all internal to systems that do not move money from one account to another. But this spreadsheet replaces previous ones. And just following along on the DD3 amendment, I'm going to skip the totals and just get to the page 2 of the HESO section, and the first page and a half of the spreadsheet are HESO. In summary, the House under either option A or option B spends $347.6 million at HESO. That is the same figure as the governor's budget. And in both option A and option B, the House concurs with all of the governor's plans at HESO, which include the Rochester Initiative, the rewrite of the state grant program, the accountability measurement system, and the reductions that the governor made in the Learning Network and reciprocity funds. The House spends the same dollars in the grant program that the governor does, but has a different package of benefits in there, which I guess, Mr. Chair, on the first page, I'll just run briefly through, and you can see the finances that get you there within the current appropriation. There is a re-estimation of need if there were no tuition increases, which pull down the amount that we would spend in the grant program, give you $8 million to be recycled into further aid. There is a $12.6 million impact of federal changes to the state tax offset table. We then go with the tuition assumptions, which HESO had made previously in the session relative to the governor's budget. The student share would be reduced to 45% of instruction, the cost of instruction. The four-year tuition maximums are increased as they were in Representative Lanning's bill, and the two-year tuition maximum is decreased to a level that is equivalent to this year's highest public sector two-year tuition and fees plus 6.5% a year, which is the tuition figure that HESO has been applying to MNSCU. Eligibility is extended to 9 semesters. We had been at 10 and then went back down to 8 last year. It goes up to 9. And then there is a HESO model adjustment that reflects the fact that HESO has a $7 million annual variance in between the projection and the expenditures in the model that is carried forward. All those together end up to be the same expenditure in the grant program as is currently the case. None is added, none is taken away. It just shuffles the eligibility. Mr. Chair, going on to page 2 of the spreadsheet, the Mayo Foundation, the House spends $2.78 million, the same as the governor, in either House option A or House option B. Moving down to MNSCU, under option A, the House would spend $1.197 billion, and under option B, $1.21 billion. For reference, compared to the governor's stated $107 million in new money for MNSCU, option A would represent $102.3 million, and option B would represent $115 million. within that, you can see in either the spreadsheet or in the bill that there is some money set aside for items that were in both the system request and, in some cases, the governor's recommendations. The Centers of Excellence are funded, the Farm Business Management Programs, part of the Minnesota Online requests, and part of the competitive salaries. At the university, the House Option A spends $1.248 billion and House Option B spends $1.26 billion. Again, for reference to the governor's numbers of new money, that would also equal $102.3 million in new funds under Option A and $115 million in new funds under Option B. And again, there are some set-asides that are reflected of the system requests or in gubernatorial actions, and you can see on the bottom of page 3 of the spreadsheet that money is set aside in the second year for Biosciences for a Healthy Society. Part of the competitive compensation, or actually all of the competitive compensation dollars, research support dollars, preparing students for a 21st century economy. And in either Option A or Option B, the Mayo Genomics Partnership is funded. And in Option B, then, there is some additional money in the first year for the 21st century technology item. Mr. Chair, the total for the bill is $2.75 billion under Option A. That's $23.4 million below the governor's number. The total for Option B is almost $2.776 billion, which is $2 million above the governor's expenditure level. And members, the last three pages of the spreadsheet show the tails. Just in summary, the tails in this bill are currently over the governor in Option A by $3.1 million and are over the governor by $9.6 million in Option B. That's primarily due to the fact that the financial aid package, tuition, and the increase in the cap drive eligibility into the second year, so they'll spend the same dollars in the 6-7 biennium. The second year is higher and drives more money into the out years. The Minsky budget is the same in its tails as the governor, and the university is below the governor in their tails. And that this committee hasn't tails haven't come up as an issue yet much, but that probably will be something that will be of increasing importance when we get the way to the meeting. Mr. Chair, I think unless there are questions, that
yes, sir.
Are there questions at Mr. Berg at this time?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gassi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned something about instructors' funding or adjustments. I just didn't quite get that when you made that.
It's a better way.
Coach. Had to do with teacher.
Is that the competitive compensation?
Yes, that's it. Could you go back to that and show me where that is in regard to? I didn't follow that in regard to the printout that I've got before me. Could you give that to me,
Mr. Chair, Representative?
What page?
On the spreadsheet you're looking at, go to page 3
right.
of the spreadsheet. And you'll see the
fourth one from the top.
Fourth one from the top is the competitive salaries initiative at the Minsky.
Okay.
If you go over to the last two sets of columns, you'll see that it's funded the same in either House Option A or House Option B. There's $4.6 million in 2006 and $9.3 million in 2007 for the competitive salaries initiative at Minsky.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And what was that in relationship to at the present time? Is this an increase, or is it the same, or is it, or what? Is it a reduction?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dempsey, it is, if you look at several columns over the agency request, it matches the agency request for this item. There is no base for this issue now in Minsky. This is a new initiative.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, where would the funding for the Midwest Higher Education Commission appear? Is that in the agency's base, or I don't see it separated out on the spreadsheet here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the money does flow through HESO's administrative base. It's never been a separate item in there. I believe it falls under director and council. Is that where we have it? It's in the director and council line.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Berger, that was my recollection. It was part of the agency base. The question I have was there was a dues increase, and how do we handle that, and making sure that we are in compliance with the compact. The amounts here under the agency are the same as what was reflected in the governor's rec, and my recollection when we had testimony from the director was that that number didn't reflect that dues increase. One of the reasons I raised that question years ago when we first joined the compact, Representative Connie Morrison and myself worked quite hard with the other states to get the offices located here. And we had really good cooperation with the University of Minnesota, so they're literally housed on the university campus. The advantage that Minnesota has with them being located here is not only the prestige of their being located here, but all the payroll and so on is here. If you will, the dues from the other states are spent in Minnesota, and I think it would look rather odd if we were the one state that didn't address the dues increase. So I would be interested in how that's being handled with the base being the same as the governor's rec. And the I don't know whether the governor didn't know about the dues increase or just what may have transpired there, but it's not a big amount in terms of the big picture.
Mr. Berg, you have a...
Mr. Chair, before we leave the funding article, I don't know if Ms. Novak is going to go over other riders. Mostly they are things that appeared with the governor's language. But one that's finance-related that I should note is that under the Centers of Excellence language, it requires the Minsky Board of Trustees to spend $2 million of their central reserves on the administration of the project. So I should note that.
And Mr. Chairman, I was interested in finding out how we handle that dues increase, whether the agency feels it's covered or not.
Susan Hegard, would you be able to respond to Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, in this committee, I don't know if we had a thorough discussion about this. I know that in the Senate there was quite a bit of discussion, and when I met with Senator Pappas, one of the requests that we had was that that increase not come out of our base. We had talked about, it's a fairly substantial increase. It's about an $8,000 increase. And one of the things that I had suggested was that we have Larry Isaac come in and explain why there was such a substantial increase. That's pretty hefty when you look at the other dues that we pay. He did that, and I think after that conversation, there was a feeling that there hadn't been a dues increase for 4 or 5 years, and Senator Pappas at least felt comfortable with recommending the increase, but she agreed not to have it be taken out of our agency base. One of the things also I think that you mentioned here is that there's never been a set-aside, and I'm open to having a line item, you know, in the budget for MEC. I don't think there ever has been one before. So, to my knowledge, I don't think we had a conversation about the increase in this committee. I may have missed one of the meetings, but to my knowledge, I don't know if Larry Isaac ever had a chance to come in and speak to this committee.
And so, Representative Carlson,
Mr. The dues increase is $8,000 per year.
That's my understanding.
It hadn't been, Mr. Chairman. I am an alternate to the Midwest Commission. I'm not sure if you're acquainted to that.
Yes, I have.
I knew that there was a high probability that you probably would be.
I know that there was an $8,000 price tag for my membership.
No, you're not a part of that. That happened before your arrival. The dues hadn't been increased for many years, and it is one of the lower costs. Like I say, by the way, by way of disclosure, I'm not only a past chair, but I serve on the executive committee, and I chaired the committee that dealt with the dues increase, so there was a fair amount of Minnesota input into that. It is a very modest amount, and like I say, it would, I think, look rather odd if the host state, if you will, didn't address that dues increase. And I can see the point that is being made about not wanting it to come out of your administrative costs, but I think a $16,000 adjustment on the base or splitting it out as a line item is something that's so modest that something I would suggest that we do.
Mr. Chair, you're suggesting that will be in the Senate bill?
Mr. Chair, I would argue strongly against taking it out of our base. I would argue against it if that is the recommendation that Representative Carlson is making. I'm not opposed to
that.
No,
that was not my recommendation.
Okay.
I don't think
correctly. Thank
I was
you.
Saying that we could have it as a line item and
great.
One of two things, either increase your base by the $16,000 or have a separate line item with that increase in it. I don't really care which way it would be done, but I think in terms of the big picture, it's something that we should do either in committee here today or perhaps in Ways and Means. When we've got what we have on the table here, Mr. Chairman, rounding the numbers comes up with that amount fairly easily when you look at our total budget.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I'm sorry, I may have misunderstood you. So if that's the recommendation that you're making, I think we'd support that as well, and it really is obviously up to you. My understanding is that it may be in the Senate bill, but I'm not going to predict what's in the Senate bill. I don't think any of us should be doing that at this point in time.
Representative Mariani, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, just for the record, I think you're worth $8,000 for the
It's actually
16.
Which
was it 16? Wow. I think you're pressing it now.
Your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Berg, on page 6, we've got the the $6,500 and the $1,300 for the first and second year of the University of Minnesota. I believe this is the preparing students for 21st century economy. Do you have the breakout amounts for those?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I'm not sure I understand your question, but what do you mean by the breakout? You mean what sub-items it would pay for?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Berg, yeah, my understanding is that there's several initiatives that are tied to that. Unless I'm mistaken.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I have what's in the budget document on it. I don't have it, and there's nothing on the spreadsheet or in the bill that allocates that anyway.
Mr. Chair, and it doesn't have to happen now, but if we're going to hear from the systems on any of these, perhaps the University of Minnesota can indulge me in my question for a few minutes.
Representative Aquart.
Hi, just to clarify this, we did the A9 amendment, right? We adopted that.
We did the which one?
A9, is that
yes.
Adopted? Okay. Yeah. On page 2, about that genomics deal. Just to help me understand better what it does, does this come out of the base of the U? And is it out of the base permanently, or is this a one-time blink out and then the base reverts to back what it was, would have been if this wasn't taken, do you know that?
It does come out of the U.
Right. Does it come out of the, is it base funding that, it's one-time funding for this, I know. But does the base whenever the base reverts to, just the base of the U is a normal number, but this is a one-time deduction from that, and it goes back to the full amount next biennium.
I'll have Mr. Berg respond.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, two questions. The genomics partnership is one-time funding in the first year of the biennium, so it does not carry forward. As regard to the university's base, the items that are funded in the second year carry forward. The way we track the tails is items that are recurring items in the second year of the biennium, fiscal 2007, carry forward into the next biennium. To the extent that the university is getting $120 million in new funds, and 15 of that is in the first year that doesn't go forward, as opposed to being put in some other item in the second year that does go forward, it reduces their base in the next year. But you can, were that money spent in the second year on something other than the genomics partnership, it would go forward, and that's why the university is below the governor's tail. Some of the money that would have appeared in their second year appropriation is now funding the genomics project.
Ms. Chair, Representative, that was a little helpful. Maybe I'll ask it a different way, just so I'm not trying to be clever, I just kind of figured this out. In the 08-09 tails, then, let's just ask about tails. You know, you never know what the future legislature will do about budgets, and we carry numbers forward. When the U comes in 08 and talks about this, would their base budget be, this won't be deducted from the base budget, having been spent this year for another purpose, will their base revert to this as though this hadn't happened? Or will the base be reduced by it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, the base, the base in the out years would be different for the university if we were spending the same amount of money and we were not doing the genomics partnership. Their base would be different, and it, in fact, would probably be somewhat higher than it is under this, because the genomics money is all in the first year and is not carried forward. Now, there's a separate issue about them. The plan for this genomics partnership, we could have Dr. Fowler come up here and do his presentation, but they envision a multi-year plan that goes across other biennia, but this is in the governor's plan and in this bill. It's funded all in the first year, and there are not recurring funds booked in 8-9 for that project.
I'll leave that at that for now. Because we had met in our meeting talking about funding, we came up with some plans, and this was kind of came out after that. So, if we're going to do this, we should do it or not. But it just doesn't seem like we should nick the U for the future bieniums for having done this worthy cause in the short term. So that might be a discussion for later on. But thank you.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if it's for you or for Doug. It's on the genomics partnership, and it's not the program itself, but I was under the impression until late yesterday afternoon that this was being tracked by the Jobs Committee. Could somebody tell me, for fiscal purposes, was it in the jobs budget? How was it shifted over here? Was there just a miscommunication? Just talk about that account, because I don't know if we even heard the genomics bill here. I don't know if they heard it in jobs, but that's a substantial amount of money, and it was a surprise. I'm not being judgmental at all about it, but I just, as a member who voting on this relatively soon, I just would like a little bit of information how this item came back to the Higher Ed Committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abrams, I can answer parts of your question. The genomics partnership appeared originally in the governor's higher education budget. It is in the higher ed books under the University of Minnesota. When the bill was introduced in the House, it was referred to Representative Gunther's committee where it currently resides. That committee did hear that bill. And it has not been re-referred to this committee or heard by this committee this year.
So, Doug, for tracking purposes, was this one just lost in the paper maze? Because, you know, I was under the impression that it was going to be carried by jobs, and I guess it's now being carried in higher ed. It's a substantial amount of money. It is a worthy project. But what happened? I think members have a right to know what happened.
I think your assumption, Representative Abrams, that it was lost in the maze is a correct one, unfortunately. And Ways and Means, I think, took a look at the options, and we were the lucky committee, or unlucky, depending. But I think we had this handed to us just kind of at the last minute as a way to rescue this program.
Well, first, Mr. Chairman, I think it is a worthy program, but it concerns me that somehow it appears that this item was lost for fiscal tracking purposes along the way. And I'm not being judgmental against anybody or any decisions that are made, but I do think that it is just a matter of some concern, and hopefully we'll be able to fix it as we go forward through conference committee.
Mr. Abrams, Representative Abrams, that's my hope too, that we can correct this as it proceeds through the process, and maybe it'll wind up back in jobs somehow.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Wolfatz.
I want to return to Representative Abler's concerns. If I understand what happened here, you had an amendment that brought that $15 million into the university's budget without affecting the university's bottom line. So back to the question Representative Abler was raising with respect to base funding, ongoing funding. Prior to that amendment, was that base funding for outgoing years, for TAILS, was that different than it is now with the $15 million amendment adopted?
Mr. Byrd.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. The spreadsheet that was produced on Friday morning with the original draft of the bill did not contain the genomics project in it, but the same amount of total funding for the university, some of which was in the second year of the biennium in the Biosciences for a Healthy Society line, making the university's base in 8 and 9 under the spreadsheet that went out on Friday higher than what it is in the spreadsheet which reflects the chair's amendment.
Okay.
That's a bad one. Yeah. Well, I guess we can get into some of the language. And I'd like to ask Ms. Novak to do that for us, please.
Mr. Chair, in Article 1, I just want to highlight a couple of the riders. On page 2, subdivision 2, that's where the changes are to the state grant program. It's partially based on Representative Lanning's bill. Mr. Brick has already gone over them. They increased the tuition maximums for four-year programs in each year of the biennium, and they decreased the tuition maximums for two-year programs, although the second year is slightly higher than the first year. And they maintain the same living and miscellaneous allowance as in the current biennium. The next rider that I want to point out is on page 4. It's subdivision 15. That's under the Higher Education Services Office. This is the appropriation for the Rochester University. The language for the Rochester University is in Article 4 of the bill. This provides the two appropriations, $200,000 for short-term planning and $3 million for implementation and development. The next rider is on page 5. It's subdivision 3 under the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. This is the language for the center, the appropriation and the language for the Centers of Excellence. In the governor's bill, it was statutory. This puts it into rider format. It was also changed by the A9 amendments. The appropriation went up, and the match requirement was changed to still $2 million, but it's not a match on a dollar-for-dollar basis, but rather to be used for administration related to the Centers of Excellence. And the match comes out of the Central Reserves of MinSTUs. And the reporting requirement was changed slightly in the A9 amendment so that the Centers of Excellence report to the Board of Trustees, who then report to the governor and the legislature. The next...
Representative Lance. It would be helpful to me if, as Ms. Novak is going through this, if you make references to the A9 amendment, if you can tell us how the change, what the change was. For example, in this case, you said the appropriation went up.
Oh.
But as I'm cross-checking with the amendment, I see it more than doubled. It went to $7.5 million. So if you could, as you're going through, it would be helpful.
Okay.
Ms. Novak?
The next rider, subdivision 4, is the governor's language on competitive salaries for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I don't believe there was no change in the A9 amendment. Under the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota, Section 4 of Article 1, we've had a fair amount of discussion about the collaboration between the Mayo and the University of Minnesota. The A9 amendment inserted the rider into Subdivision 2 on the biosciences. It's identical to the language in the governor's bill. And on page 7, subdivision 6, there is a new rider on deaf students. It's an encouragement or request for the university to provide similar tuition benefits for graduates of the State Academy for the Deaf as they do under statute for the State Academy for the Blind. The remainder of the riders have really been covered by the discussion of the spreadsheet. Going to Article 2, where the statutory language changes begin. Section 1 is from the governor's bill, and there's no change. It makes some conforming changes to the way that the obligation to be current on child support payments for eligibility for financial aid programs is handled in the data privacy statute. Sections 2 and 3 are from Representative Nornes's bill. It eliminates the base enrollment adjustment from the funding formula for the public post-secondary systems. That's found on pages 13 and 14 of the bill. Section 4 of the bill on pages 15 and 16 is from Representative Opat's bill. It provides authority for the state universities to offer applied doctoral degrees in certain professional fields, including education psychology, physical therapy, audiology, and nursing. Next set of sections, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, are from the MinSTU technical bill. They begin on pages 17 and 18. Section 5 makes some changes to the Academic Excellence Scholarship that's funded through the sale of license plates. It authorizes campuses to award these scholarships in any field of study. Section 6 provides an option for the institutions to make full scholarship awards. Under current law, they are required to make a full award or no award at all. Section 7 provides an optional renewal of the academic excellence scholarships. Under current law, they have to renew them for the full 4 years. Section 8 makes some changes to the way senior citizens, the benefit for free tuition and fees for senior citizens. It makes some changes in the way that is handled. It clarifies what they must pay for. Section 9 exempts some contract training and professional education classes from the free enrollment benefit that's provided to senior citizens. Section 10 and 11, beginning on page 18, is from the governor's bill, House Bill 1385, and these are changes to the Higher Education Services Office. The first one, Section 10, deals with their statutory responsibility for data collection, saying that they must have collection of data on both students and institutions. And Section 11 changes the purpose of an existing council in the Higher Education Services Office. The Higher Education Services Council is later repealed in this bill. Section 12 makes changes to the existing council, the Student Advisory Council, that changes its name and makes some other changes. Section 13 is again from the governor's bill, and it eliminates the authority of the Student Advisory Council to appoint students to a task force. Section 14 is from Representative Opat's bill on reciprocity. It requires CISO to submit an annual report on reciprocity to the legislature. Section 15 is from the governor's bill, and again makes conforming changes on child support obligations for eligibility for state grants. Section 16 is where the student share in calculating the amount of state grants is changed from 46% to 45%. This has an impact on the appropriations in Article 1. Section 17 on page 22 is the cost of attendance. This is different than in the governor's bill. It leaves the average tuition and fees as the basis for calculating the state grant award. On page 23, section 18 makes a statutory increase in the number of semesters of eligibility for the state grant program. It increases it from 8 to 9 semesters. Section 19 is from the governor's bill, and it requires participating post-secondary institutions to provide CISO with data on student enrollment. Section 20 is a new section to this bill, and it has conforming eligibility, length of eligibility for the child care grant program to the increase from 8 to 9 semesters in the state grant award. Section 21, 22, 23, 24 are all from the governor's bill and make some technical changes and policy changes that have been discussed in this committee. Section 23 puts into statute a program that's known as the GRIP program. There are no new applicants, but this deals with those loans that are outstanding. Excuse me. Section 25 on page 26 is from Representative Nornes's bill. It allows the student organizations to make their recommendations for student representatives on the Board of Trustees on the same date as as the Advisory Council makes its recommendations, and that would be April 15th. Page 26 is from the Minsky bill, and it provides an option for technical colleges to offer either certificates or degrees in the program. Pages 26 to 33, sections 27 to 40 of the bill are changes to the Minnesota College Savings Plan. These have not changed since we discussed it as part of the governor's bill and the amendment to the governor's bill. Section 41, beginning on page 33, is from Representative Sikora's bill. It makes some changes to the way that region candidates are elected by changing the advisory committee, changes the appointments to the region candidate advisory committee. This is somewhat different than it was in Representative Sikora's bill. It allows the Senate and the House to each appoint 10 members and the Alumni Association and the University of Minnesota Foundation to each appoint 2 members to the committee. And Section 43 requires the advisory committee to submit recommendations to the governor. And Section 44 provides that the governor makes nominations and provides a slate of candidates to the legislature, which then elects the regents. Section 45 is from Representative Severson's bill. It makes some changes in the way that benefits are provided to disabled military veterans. It allows them to withdraw from courses with a refund of tuition and or to receive a grade of incomplete or to continue and complete the course after their condition is resolved. Section 46 is from the governor's bill. It allows the additional semester of eligibility for students who were withdrew due to active military service. Section 47 is a conforming amendment also to the Peace Office for Survivor Education Benefits. Section 48 is from Representative Opetz's bill on reciprocity. It requires PISO to examine the feasibility of reinstating interstate payments with South Dakota. Section 49 is from the governor's bill, and it provides a retroactive effective date for all of the extensions of financial aid eligibility for those students who withdrew for active military service. Section 50 is the governor's proposal for an advisory task force on post-secondary funding, and it requires HESO to convene a task force. Section 51 is related to Representative Sikora bill changing the region's election process, and it provides for some transitional appointments to the committee. Section 52 is new. It is based on Representative Westrum's bill on alternative format instructional material. It requires HESO to convene a group of public post-secondary representative to develop a network for material in electronic format. The material must be made available to Minnesota students who require a reading accommodation and to all post-secondary institutions. Section 53 is from the governor's bill. It's a revisor instruction changing the name of the Higher Education Services Office to the Minnesota Office of Higher Education in the statutes and rules. Section 54 is a repealer. It repeals the Higher Education Services Council and its responsibility for appointing certain task forces, and it also repeals the rules of 2 already repealed programs. The Youth Works and the ATIB Scholarship Program. Article 3, we have discussed in here. It is the governor's proposal for making some changes to the regulation of private career schools. I'm not going to go over those unless there are questions. They haven't changed since they were in this committee. And beginning on page 55 of the bill is Article 4 on the Rochester University. This is Representative Bradley's bill, and the only change in it from the time it was in the committee, well, there are 2 changes. One, it makes the meetings of the, it eliminates the exemption from the open meeting law. So the meetings of the development committee are subject to the open meeting law, and two, the appropriations were moved into Article 1. And then Article 5 on pages 58 and 59 of the bill are Option B supplemental appropriations to the university and to the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Novak before we move on? We have some amendments.
Yeah.
Representative Wentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 55, Article 4, dealing with Rochester, I had raised some questions during our hearing on this about faculty participation in the committee that would be reviewing this. As I'm taking a look at this, and from Ms. Novak's comments, I trust that there was no provision added to provide for faculty participation in the Rochester process. Is that correct?
I think that's a correct assumption, Representative Wax. Okay, if there are no other questions, we'll I think deal with the amendments at this time. There will be an opportunity for some testimony once we get through the amendments. First, I think A5. Representative Carlson, is that your bill or your amendment?
A5, is that the one dealing with
financial aid
one? I'm going to hold off on that amendment, Mr. Chairman. In fact, I'll hold off. I won't offer it during this committee.
Okay. A7. Representative Lopez, you just stepped up. The A7 amendment, Representative Lopez, you wish to offer that?
Sure.
There's some hesitation, but you just found it, right?
Many.
Okay, would you care to explain your
amendment? Sure. Mr. Chair, this has to do with the reciprocity agreements with neighboring states. I have two amendments that I appreciate the language that's already in the bill with respect to the issues that have been discussed quite thoroughly here in committee. This first amendment would address, I think, a relatively modest way, the frustration that we heard here and the testimony from the University of Minnesota about the fact that the disparity in tuition rates for Wisconsin students who come to Minnesota is very large and growing, and they're paying significantly less than our own Minnesota students. What this bill would do is not change that reality, but encourage HESO to commence negotiations such that in the end that whatever agreements we have would result in a fair situation in which outstate students would at least pay what our own Minnesota residents pay. So, and it states it in the form of a goal, that the goal would be of reducing or eliminating this disparity. It doesn't change the agreements. It doesn't force HESO to do anything, but it requests that they pursue that goal, and which I thought seemed to be pretty universal, and I think I know particularly the University of Minnesota is concerned about that disparity. So that's the amendment.
Mr. Seagard, would you care to comment on this particular amendment?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Susan Hugard with the Higher Education Services Office, Representative Opetz. To your amendment, we are already in the middle of a negotiation, so you'd be directing us to do something that we're already doing. So perhaps we're offering comfort. I'm not really sure with this language, but we're in the middle of a negotiation right now with Wisconsin, South Dakota, and North Dakota.
Representative Opetz. What I'm trying to do is provide you additional ammunition as you discuss this issue. I mean, I think it might be helpful to you in those negotiations to point to legislative interest in this issue.
Thank you, Representative Opetz. That could be helpful. The concern I have is just making sure that you all understand that we can't legislate a result. I mean, it's a contract, as I've explained in here before. So, you know, we can't tell them what to do. We can either be in or we're out. So just to your point, though, about the disparity, we have talked with Wisconsin about the disparity. We're still in the middle of the negotiation, as I had mentioned. We've talked with them twice. The ball's really sort of in their court at this point in time. They've got a number of issues that they're in the process of responding to us on. And they are still paying us a $6 to $7 million check every year, which is nice for the state. But I think that this would basically support what we're doing right now. So I don't see harm necessarily in the amendment, and in fact it may offer some support to us. But just as long as it's stated as a goal, I think it's just fine.
Thank you. And I would point out with respect to your point about not mandating what that final negotiation looks like. I would point out the language on line 14 and 15 in particular, where it says this section does not mandate the inclusion of any particular term in a tuition reciprocity agreement. So again, I'm trying to strengthen your hand as we negotiate so they are clear that the legislature is concerned about that.
So, Ms. Hugard, do you have services?
Mr. Chair, no. As long as I think I'm comfortable now that Representative Opetz has gone through his intent, I think I'm comfortable with the amendment as it stands.
Thank you. Any other questions on the A7 amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Dempsey.
I'd just like to, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to say something. I'm a new member of this particular committee, and it was reassuring to me. I know I had some questions in regard to the situation with South Dakota and Wisconsin and reciprocity and so on. And I think it is at least from my perspective, it's good news what was just presented by the presenter regarding the fact that the University of Minnesota is doing on its own proposing a solution to the problem. I see many, many times all we do is we fund programs, but they never solve the problem. And what the university is doing here, I think, is solving the problem and working on that particular situation. And I think that's noteworthy. So I just want to extend my thanks to the University of Minnesota for the good work that they're doing on this particular situation. Appreciate your good doing.
Representative Dempsey, just a slight correction. It's HESO that's doing the negotiating.
Oh, it is. Oh, okay. Well, who's ever...
They're doing good work.
Okay, and I had it wrong, but I heard from the representative from the University of Minnesota that whoever, I like the process that they're doing of solving the problem. That's the main thing. So, thank you very much.
Representative Carlson.
Sharon, I know the amendment before us deals with Wisconsin, but I have a question, Ms. Hugard, in terms of how close the tuition costs are between North and South Dakota and Minnesota.
Would like to respond.
The reason I asked the question indicated that they're in negotiations with all three states, and it's been so long since we've talked about this issue, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what kind of disparities may exist on the western borders.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, unfortunately I don't have my reciprocity kind of information right at hand here with the numbers, but my recollection is that the difference between Wisconsin and Minnesota is substantial. The difference between North Dakota and South Dakota and Minnesota is not nearly as substantial. I think it's fairly minimal, but I'd be happy as soon as I get back to my office to provide you with that information if that would be helpful, and to the other committee members.
Mr. Chairman, that would be fine. Just thought while the negotiations are going on, if there is a significant disparity, or if we see that disparity growing, I know under this bill there will be some fairly significant tuition increases, at least that was the testimony earlier, and so it would not only be a question of where the disparity is currently, but what it might lead to if we have another round of tuition increases in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I'd be happy to get that information for you. That is part of our kind of work that we'll be pulling together when we report back to you on our negotiations, but thank you for that suggestion.
Okay, I think we're ready to vote on the 8-7 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. The A-8 amendment.
I'll move that amendment.
Okay.
And members, this is the second one. This is the one we had a considerable discussion about the issue of, and I think Representative Lass was discussing this as well, would help us better understand where students who come to Minnesota end up after they graduate. Do they stay in Minnesota and then therefore we benefit from the economic productivity that they provide? And then on the other side, Minnesota students who leave, how many of those students ultimately return? And so all this amendment does is help us collect that data and so that the legislature can receive a report on exactly some of the benefits that we assume, I think accurately assume, derive from the reciprocity movement of students across borders. So that's what this amendment does.
We'd like to get a response from HESO as to the effects of this amendment.
And I should add, this was one of the recommendations that came out of the state auditor's report on their analysis of the reciprocity requirements.
Mr. Chairman, OPEPS, the concern I think that we've had a chance to briefly discuss here is with FERPA, which is the federal data privacy law. When I'm looking at the Social Security numbers, I've just put a circle around that on this page. The concern I have is I don't want us to commit to this work if we're not able to do it. And so I'm concerned that we might be precluded by the federal law from collecting some of this information. So this could be premature. I mean, it's something I'd be happy to look into and get an answer for you on, but I think today agreeing to do this work could be premature.
Mr. Chair, it's been a while since I had worked on this amendment, but my recollection, my understanding of the way it's drafted, that this deals with making sure that it's done within the bounds of the Data Privacy Act in Minnesota and FERPA.
Representative Eastline, I didn't see who was speaking.
That was the issue that I had too. I guess the way it's worded, it looks like it says that the application must request the use of the student social security number. But I guess my question would be: would they be required to fill it in?
Representative Eastland, no, they wouldn't be required to. It be required.
I mean, that may be the catch. So
and that's federal law.
So it probably should be indicated on that it's voluntary or something, so that would be a clear indication to the person filling out the application that it's not a required part of the application.
Mr. Chair, we do believe, though, that the federal law would kick in because you're dealing with multiple state, students who live in multiple states, not just students in Minnesota. So we are fairly clear that the federal law would most certainly apply in this situation.
So you believe the amendment at this time is...
Well, I think that if it's voluntary, and the students don't have to fill it in, that's helpful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lopez, I don't know if this helps, but again, line 17 through 20 it specifically uses the term request the use of students' social security numbers, and then in line 19 and 20, reciprocity students must be informed that social security numbers will be used only to evaluate the reciprocity program. So trying to meet what I understand are some stringent state and federal privacy laws. But again, I think that the outcome will be it's exactly what we've been talking about. The speaker.
Mr. Chair, I can't today tell you whether we think that this is absolutely okay. You know, I can only tell you right now, given the brief time that we've had here, that the federal law would kick in, and that I think you're right, the information would be useful. My concern is just about how we're gathering it. But, you know, we're certainly the information that would be gathered would be of value, and it's something that we're interested in as well.
Representative Abler.
Perhaps a friendly oral amendment might help this system move along. This has a few stops to go before it becomes law, as I check the process. This is on line 7. After the word must, if you'd insert the word consider, and then change develop to developing, then at least that would leave this in a mix to be discussed along the way to the floor and to ways and means and all. And if there's some technical changes that could make, I think we'd be interested in knowing some of this data if it can be developed in a good way. And I think that way, if OPATS and HESO can have a nice discussion along the way, that way it's just permissive at this point.
That works for me, Mr. Chair. I'll accept
it as
a friendly amendment.
Does that work better for HESO also?
I believe, Mr. Chair, that would work better for us. We'd still need to do some, take a look at it, but it would work better for us, yes.
Any further questions, Representative Lance?
Mr. Chairman, on that note, would that change give HESO the authority, if they chose to do so, to simply not develop any of this? They decided their staff was overworked and they couldn't get to it. They just decided not to address this at all.
Representative Hopatz can.
Mr. Chair, I think the answer to your question is yes, but my hope would be in the next couple weeks as the process moves forward, we could clarify with HESO what the issues are, and that language could be removed if there's comfort that we're doing it within the bounds of data privacy. But I think the answer, yeah, with the ABLE amendment, it does kind of leave it up to them if we don't change it.
I think it's kind of a middle ground here, so we can move on.
I would at least like to hear HESO's commitment to going forward with this idea, subject to working out language that allows it to happen.
You have a response?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Representative Letts. You know, I don't know, in my mind, I don't know why it would be in our interest not to do something that you're suggesting or requesting that we do, but here I give you my commitment that we'll take a look at this and work on it, and as it goes through the process, and if in the end, you know, it's something that you want us to do, we'll follow through on that. But I think it's important information. We've talked about it in this committee for a number of years, and I think it would be information for the state that would be useful.
Thank you. Okay, if there are no more questions, we're ready to vote on the A8 amendment, including the friendly amendment. All those in favor say aye. I'm sorry. All those opposed? Okay. It's two refs. The amendment is adopted. Members, I believe, unless I have miscounted, that is all of the amendments that we have. Did we overlook any?
Which one has?
You had
I had an
A6, but that's already been incorporated.
That's been taken care of.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
What about
Representative Marianne?
Mr. Chair, can we entertain some more questions here? Before, is that appropriate at this time?
That's correct. Very appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps Ms. Hegart from HESO can help with this. This is on Article 2, Section 10, on page 18. Mr. Chair and members, this is the change in HESO's responsibilities for the collection of certain data. And the language I have here is we're striking, collecting and maintaining student enrollment and financial aid data, and then we're adding reporting data on students, post-secondary and post-secondary institutions to measure progress in student learning. And I'm supportive of the additional language there, but I'm a little worried about striking the collection of student enrollment and financial aid data itself. And I don't know why the two need to be necessarily exclusive, and I'm wondering if Kiesel can tell us whether this language means, as they interpret it, whether this language means that they no longer would see it as their responsibility to collect and maintain financial aid data for the state.
That's on page 18, you said?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Line 32?
Line
or 31?
31 through 34.
Sigurd, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, my staff will correct me if I'm off here, but my understanding on page 18, when we struck student enrollment and financial aid data, if you look on to page 23, we didn't want to be duplicative. If, when possible, we try not to duplicate things, and so here we added language that would state that an eligible institution must provide to the office student enrollment financial aid financial and other data as determined by the director to enable the office to carry out its responsibilities. So this is the position that would then require all all institutions that participate in the financial aid programs that HUSO offers to provide us with enrollment data. So it's not actually, it looks like we're taking that away from the data collection, but we're not. There is a focus on it on page 23.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Hegart, and thank you for pointing out that language, but it seems to me there's still sort of a loop that isn't completed here. I mean, obviously the intent here would then be for your office to receive this information, but in current language, we then prescribe to you what to do with it, which is to, well, actually, you know, language is collect and maintain, which means I guess it could wind up on a shelf somewhere. But typically, you don't do that. I mean, you've reported that out. So I guess maybe the question would be, would it be your intent to continue to report publicly, you know, the data in terms of student involvement and financial aid trends and et cetera? Because that's really valuable and important stuff for us to have.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani, absolutely. I think another point I'll make is that data was meant to be inclusive as opposed to exclusive. So data was, the use of the word data was intended to include student enrollment and financial aid data as well, and not exclude it when it was struck, if that makes sense. But, no, our intention is not to just let the information sit on a shelf. I think that it's our obligation to make sure that we're collecting it, that we examine it, and then we disseminate it. Actually, within, you know, if we're allowed, if legally we're precluded from disseminating, we won't do that. But if, to the extent that we're able to make that information available to you, we'll do that.
Thank you.
Representative Abel.
I don't have an amendment, Mr. Chair, but I just wanted to express a thought, actually kind of carrying on with my original, my one question of the day topic. And maybe I'll ask a question number one. I just want to make it clear. I have a feeling this will be addressed as we go along, and there's a Ways and Means Committee that cleans up some of these eventualities, and maybe they should be the ones to tidy up our tail targets. But I don't think that when we voted on targets on the floor, that we were voting on a lower target in the 08-09 year for higher ed. I made my vote. I picked column A or column B. I've chosen to live with column A, frankly, process. But I don't think that I voted for, if I understand that the target is 15, meaning tell me how much lower the target is in the out year, up end, but I voted for minus 23 and minus 23 based upon the governor, and not for minus 30-something or 40-something or whatever it winds up being. And so I'm going to vote for the bill today to move the process along because it needs to move along, but I'm a little challenged by having to vote for a good idea as against another good idea. That kind of came out late, and I know you're frustrated in the same way, then we're going to try to resolve this all. My hope as this process goes on, we can find a way to restore that $50 million into our target where we had agreed that it would come from, absent this little maze, the thing that dropped into our the lapse, and a very worthy, important thing for the state of Minnesota. So is that sufficient to express my concern, just so you'll know that we'll be working on it, and whether it be, I hope in Ways and Means we can get that resolved by then, so I know it came up suddenly. So.
I would add to your comments that the chair feels the same way. So, Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the amendment, but it's possible to put in writer language that the base of the University of Minnesota will increase $15 million for FY 2008, and that basically takes care of the problem.
Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Abrams, it would be possible to do something like that. A couple of things to clarify here. The university is not $15 million below where it would have been in the governor's tails. Under option A, it's $12.5 million below in the out years, and in option B, it's $6 million below. But to the same point, it would be possible to put rider language in to artificially increase the base in the out years by one of those two amounts. Separately, however, this bill collectively is still over the governor's tail targets because of the financial aid program. In other years, targets have been assigned with tail targets. That has not happened in the budget target resolution this year, and the Ways and Means Committee has not put out any official targets for tails. They'll probably be turning their attention to that as the bills move through. Other than that, the committees were not given direct instructions on tails.
Mr. Chair, Representative April, I think I thought of a question that can give you the answer I want. Because of the A9 amendment relative to lines on page 2 of that genomics piece, how did that affect the 0809 tails for the U? That's the question I'm trying to... What's the specific number?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, that would be the 12-point... The university's budget is below the governor in 0809 by $12.5 million in option A and $6 million in option B. And that is a direct result of the change to the genomics partnership. When it was not in there, the university's tails were the same as the governor, as they currently are at Minsky.
So should we make an amendment? Representative Abrams.
No, I don't have the language here. I'm gonna put my faith in the system that are able to fix it in Ways and Means Committee. I don't have the language here. But... it really seems to me that the university is getting twice here. Once because, as opposed to the Senate, which is carrying this in their deed budget, in their jobs budget, the university gets hit in the higher ed budget. And if you really start thinking about it, this really is a jobs program, not a higher ed program. So they get hit once. Because of the decision being made that it be carried in this budget, and then they're getting hit a second time in the tails because we carried it as a one-time appropriation in the higher ed budget. So, rather than try to amend on the fly and then have to amend it again in Ways and Means, I'd like to work with you and Representative Abler and the staff in order to try to at least make sure that the university doesn't get hit twice for a decision that was made.
I think the committee here would totally agree with you, and I'm putting my faith also in the chair of the Ways and Means Committee and others who can help us fix this problem. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, this is another issue. If we're ready to move on, at least if it's appropriate.
Brilliant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier, I had asked a question on page 6 with the regards to the University of Minnesota's appropriations, which I believe are the preparing students for 21st century, sort of comes under their title of that. I'm wondering if perhaps someone from the university can answer just a couple of quick questions in regards to those appropriations.
Someone from the university care to step to the table? Welcome.
Good morning. Robert Jones, Senior Vice President for System Administration.
Representative Mariani has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Dr. Jones. How are you?
Good morning.
The appropriations here, they have very specific, if I remember correctly, they have very specific components to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get, I'll cut right to the issue here. And let me say, I'm not trying to bust university's chops here, but since those proposals came in to us and we had the presentation from the proposal, we also then had the release of the report for the restructuring of the University of Minnesota. And Mr. Chair, let me just say for the record that I have tremendous respect and deference to the leadership of Dr. Brunings and his staff at the University of Minnesota. However, I have some concerns in regards to some of the possible outcomes of that restructuring. And I think I'm right when I say in this particular piece here that there's a portion for what are commonly called as merit scholarships. We've not really had a chance to talk about that. And I know, Mr. Chair, you're going to have a hearing hopefully later on, and we'll get a chance to talk more. But just very briefly, Dr. Jones, if you can tell us how much of this appropriation is dedicated to that, and if you can just quickly tell us what the nature of those scholarships are, what the intended goal of that of those are.
Jones?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, the preparing students for the 21st century economy part of our Bonnier request is essentially our attempt to focus attention on the issue of educating some of the best and the brightest students from every sector of the state, from all walks of life and from every social economic background. It is pretty much driven by the fact that, as you well know, the university has made some significant progress in terms of improving its undergraduate programs in the last few years. But we're still faced with the very real problem that about two-thirds of the students that we offer admittance to the university to actually decide to enroll elsewhere. And the fact of the matter is these students are some of the best and the brightest. A very large percentage of them actually rank in the top 25% of their graduating classes. And when we've done surveys to try to understand why these students are choosing not to enroll in the University of Minnesota, and another point I think is important to mention is when these students fail to enroll in the University of Minnesota, they actually leave the state. They enroll elsewhere. And so from an economic perspective and from a talent magnet perspective, we feel it's very important that we think about strategies to try to recruit these students. And in our analysis of the problem and talking to parents of these type of students, we fundamentally understand now why a lot of these students choose not to enroll even after being offered admittance to the University of Minnesota. Primarily has to do with the size of the classes, kind of very large atmosphere that the university offers, concern about first year retention, concern about progress toward graduation, and concern about the availability of scholarships. We just do not have the resources now to offer the kind of the competitive scholarships in order to be able to retain this particular cohort of students. So, and under the 21st, preparing for the students for the 21st century economy, there are three or four major pieces to our request. One having to do with being a talent magnet for undergraduate students, and the other has to do with providing competitive scholarships for graduate and professional students. And then lastly, making sure that we're preparing students to transition from their university experience to the workplace. I think the piece that you're most interested in has to do with the undergraduate piece, and there were three or four pieces under that I would just like to highlight to perhaps to better illuminate and answer your question. One is the North Star Leadership Program, which is a program that the university and others have been participating in for a number of years. It's a attempt on our part to really, starting at the sophomore year, put in place a structure where we can start to develop relationships with these high-ability students in their sophomore year by providing an opportunity for them to come to campus to really start to experience the University of Minnesota. And so we're asking specifically for funds to double that particular part of the program. And the other has to do with a program that is called Fast Track. It is a way of accelerating students transition to accelerate students' completion of an undergraduate program in the fastest manner possible by essentially making sure they are linked into highly intensive programs, and to we actually would like to link this with some of the programs that we feel are critically important to advance the economic impact in the state. We have these programs in place in a number of our colleges, and this is very congruent with what we see as some of our strategic priorities. And so we would like to have more of our students participate in these fast-track programs to get them through the university at a faster rate, and into graduate professional schools, and into the marketplace here in the state of Minnesota. And then, of course, congruent with what you saw in the strategic positioning document, and congruent with what we have in our biennial request, we would like to essentially expand our honors program, because we also, through our survey work, understand that there is a significant cohort of students who are looking for that very intense undergraduate experience, and they don't come to the University of Minnesota because, even though we have very good honors programs in individual colleges, we don't have a system-wide or a campus-wide honors program. So we're asking for funds to essentially help to strengthen that particular part of what we do. And then the last piece is to strengthen the undergraduate research opportunities for students, because we also know that this is also a magnet for attracting the best and the brightest students to the university. And as it relates to the strategic planning process and the recommendations, as, again, this is very much congruent with what we've asked for and what we, in the biennial request, and what we propose to do in terms of strategic positioning to try to make sure that the university is open and accessible to students from every social economic background. And we also very much understand that there will be that kind of representation in this 21st century piece as well. This is not just about high ability students, but we want to make sure that we have high ability students from across the whole spectrum that this great state has to offer.
Mr. Chairman Mariani.
Mr. Chairman, and that's helpful. And again, I do look forward to our period. I hope we're able to have that in a couple of weeks. I simply wanted to point out the juxtaposition of both of those dynamics, and I think you've helped explain some of that. But I want to make sure that we were cognizant that we've got, and I know it's somewhat unfair to talk about it as a standalone issue because you've talked about how it's all interconnected here.
But right.
I think it's important for us to know as we're moving forward and we're responding to what I think will be some increased agitation on the part of our constituents, that that there's a small piece here that's commonly referred to as merit scholarship component, and that we're moving forward with that at the same time that folks are raising concerns about some of the access issues you talked about at the very end in regards to the general college and the restructuring thing. And so I, Mr. Chair, my point here really is just to make sure that we're real cognizant of that as we move forward. And I look forward to, as I said earlier, to our subsequent hearing and our ability to get more in depth into some of these issues. Thank you.
Pleasure. Representative Lance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm ready to move on to a different topic if there's that's appropriate. I just wanted to note with appreciation that after I raised the question of adding faculty representatives to the Rochester process, that the chair has communicated to me that he'd be willing to accept that as an amendment in Ways and Means if we prepare something, and I appreciate that. And it's my intent to prepare something to give to you to accomplish that. So thank you.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, are you ready to go to another section of the bill?
We're ready to move to another section. That's good.
Mr. Chair, I have a concern over the Centers of Excellence on page 5, and I would like someone from Minster to come up and answer a couple of questions. Mr. Chair, one of the early meetings when we had Mr. Berg do an overview of higher ed, I raised a concern about fencing, and that I had hoped we wouldn't come down to fenced off money and how fenced money impacts higher education. So I've got a question for Minskew. I'm going to take the Centers of Excellence.
I notice that if I look at the change in the language from the governor's bill, and maybe I'm not reading it correctly, but it looks like on page 5, lines 19 through 22, that there isn't a limit to the numbers of centers of excellence anymore, just as to the makeup of the centers of excellence. So my first question is this. This money's fenced off. How will you disperse this money throughout the system? And what happens to a state university or a community college or a technical college that is not a center of excellence?
Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor and Chief Financial Officer for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. To your question, Representative Pelosi, I read it the same way, that there's no longer a number limit. I think the earlier version of the governor's language said 6, and that is gone. And we also, and I'll take this opportunity to clarify this, we also read this language to indicate that the centers may only be designated in the listed fields. This is sort of an unusual use of the word may, and so we read the section several times to make sure that it would be the author's intent that we may designate in the listed areas only, rather than these among others. So we would read it that way, that there are 5 fields here, and they are the same fields that have been traveling in this conversation from the beginning. We would hope that the application of those fields could be viewed broadly, so that it would make it possible for us to be as creative as possible with these resources. We also would read this language to indicate that we would be using designations that always include a state university and may include up to 2 other of our two-year schools. So in that context, then, we might have 6 state universities each partnering with 1 or 2 other two-year colleges. Or we might have 1 state university partnering 6 times or 10 times or however many times we do it, but that we'd always have a state university involved with 1 or 2 of our other colleges. As far as how we would distribute this money, we envision, consistent with this language, that we would undertake a competitive grant process that would include the criteria that you see here, that there'd be an evaluation process and recommendations made to the Board of Trustees, and that they would select then the centers for development. I have no sense of how many centers are going to come out of the process, so I have no way of assuring you either that every school will get a little bit of this money or that several schools will get most of it and the rest would get none. At this juncture, I'm unable to answer your immediate concern.
Well, Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, then answer me this. What happens to a center that doesn't, to a state university or a community college or a tech college that doesn't get what would happen to a state university that is not a center of excellence under this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pelosi, one of our concerns with this language from the beginning has been that we did not want it to contribute to the sense that if you're not named a center of excellence, then you don't have excellent things going on.
That's not my question. I'm not talking about a title now. I'm talking about money. I want to know what happens if a state university, but it could be a tech college or a community college, is not designated a center of excellence.
Then they're not able to access these funds.
Then, Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, that would be a base cut.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pelosi, I would remind the committee that our enrollment adjustment is $130 million. So in many cases, we've got a base cut across the system at the total bill level before we even talk about the individual items. That's correct.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, you said that's correct. So now we're going to do another base cut on top of a base cut. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pelosi, yes, you could run that logic. That's correct.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, I'm going to run something else past you. Given the way this language is crafted, and if I were sitting at Minsky, I was looking at the state universities and the community colleges, if I do a quick total in my head of the state universities and the community colleges and the tech colleges,
could I name all of them centers of excellence and include them all in this, and then we would do it the Minnesota way? We would all be just a little bit more excellent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, I don't think that would work, because even if each of the two-year partners were different institutions, we have 25 two-year partners, and that would only get us to 12.
So, Mr. Chair, Pulaski, Vice Chancellor King, we're back at somebody's going to get a base cut on top of a base cut here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, yes, that's correct.
Well, Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, thank you. And that was my point back in January, that when you start fencing money, we're going down a road where someone isn't going to get it, for whatever reasons.
That's correct.
And that's the problem with the Centers of Excellence, but it's also the problem with any other money that's fenced in this bill. We already have a cut dealing with enrollment. On top of that is going to be another base cut, whether it's a Center of Excellence or any of the other things that are fenced in this bill. That's just the point I want to make. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I have one other question. Vice Chancellor King, while you're here, under option A in the Minsky system, what would be the enrollment, or what would be the tuition increase for Minsky system-wide under option A?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, option A is the one that helped me out. It's the one that provides the governor's recommendation less $23 million for the whole bill.
I could get my wheel and spin it.
Yeah,
I could be gambling. I don't want to do
that. At that funding level, we would be down $28 million on the enrollment adjustment alone, and because our enrollment adjustment was $130 million, and that would, the governor or the bill here is at $102 million. And we'd be then without the $66 million in budget initiatives that we requested. So we'd be down $90 million from our overall budget request. And if the board were to choose to raise tuition to replace all those dollars, it would be an increase somewhere between 9 and 10% a year. The board has not made that decision and would reserve the right to wait until this process is over. But that's where you get if you do it all with tuition.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, and you would still have the option of the individual campuses then raising tuition at whatever number that would be approved by the board.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, the 9 or 10% is the system average.
I agree.
So we could have like the new university discussion that is probably at least a 10% increase or more anywhere, as long as overall the average would come out to be a 10% increase in total revenue.
So, Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, it is exceedingly likely we are looking at double-digit increases in tuition in the Minsky system under this bill, option A.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, I really hesitate to agree to that statement because our board just has not had the conversation. If we were to raise tuition to replace the funds missing in this bill, yes, it would be a double-digit increase. But the board is so distressed about the tuition increases of the last several years. And you've seen the debt study that we recently released and the debt burden that's come in on students. I just can't put them in that position at this point.
Vice Chancellor King, I am equally distressed. And I think you have a huge need out there that is growing. You are in a box that I'm also in now.
That's right.
So
that's right.
I sympathize, but I don't see any way out of double-digit increases in tuition under this bill, option A.
Representative Carlson.
Before this King gets away, being that we've got tuition discussion on the table, and you referenced 9 to 10% possible tuition increase, could you remind me and the committee where our community colleges in particular rank nationally on tuition already?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, the most recent national research that we've seen has our community colleges, I believe, fourth highest in the nation in tuition. The thing that was interesting to me about that study is that that they've held that position now for a couple of years. So the rest of the nation has not raised tuition as fast as we have. That's my conclusion from that.
And, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I wanted to point that out because, we have different missions and roles for each of our campuses, and the community colleges in particular are open access institutions. That's the window, if you will, where people have an opportunity to start their college career.
That's correct.
And we are fourth highest in the country. I think that does raise some important questions, especially when we consider a lot of those students are the non-traditional students working part-time.
Right.
Often don't qualify for financial aid as a result of that, and yet those institutions are becoming more and more expensive. And I don't think this particular funding level that we find for Minsky on this bill helps that situation at all. But thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Opatz.
Just, Mr. Chair, Ms. King, just to clarify on the tuition, is that the 9 to 10% increase, is that per year?
Yes. Yes.
We have discovered that in the DE3 amendment there was some language deleted that shouldn't have been. Turn to page 5. I'd like to offer an amendment to insert on line 14, after the word designate, insert 6 to 8. So it was supposed to be there.
Mr. Chair, I'd speak against that.
Okay, you can do that.
Yes, that was yes.
Mr. Chair?
I'm just trying to be accurate here. And yeah. Representative.
Can I offer a different amendment that people like better? Or do you want to offer that? Is that right? Okay, you're going to really offer that? Okay.
Give it a crack.
I'm still offering the amendment.
Oh, I didn't realize. I thought you were with fine.
No, I'm,
okay.
It's an opportunity. if you don't want to insert that number, that's fine. But it was in the original bill. That's why we're doing
it. Yeah. Well,
Mr. Chair, officially take it out if you want.
Maybe this is serendipity. There was a reason. It didn't show up. I think why hamstring the system. I think leaving it flexible is a good idea.
Okay. Well, then I'll withdraw the amendment.
Do you want to do this other one then? Is that okay?
Is this one amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, I think that this may not be the final language, but I think the attitude of the committee and the will of the committee is that whatever happens, this genomics thing, which was our joy to carry it for the moment, but we didn't want that to affect the out years. And I think that there may be technical changes to this, how it may be worded, but I think it's important for us to carry the will of this committee forward into the Ways and Means process, that they know that we didn't intend to reduce the U by the $12.5 million in the outline. And staff has witnessed, and they can maybe describe it, but it reinserts for two different years, $6.25 million in the base rates of 2008 and 2009, and then that's in the A option, and then the page 59 is the B option. Should the gambling pass, then that would be additional $3 million each year. So,
Ms. Novak, do you want to describe what it is?
Mr. Chair, I just clarify that because there is more funding in Article 5, Option B, that it actually replaces the first base adjustment with another one that increases it by $3 million each year. So the second part of the amendment is a substitute for the first one, should House File 1644-60F.
Mr. Berg, do you have
a... Mr. Chair, and then just to clarify further, this would set the tails for the university in either Option A or Option B at the same level as the governor's plan, which is where Minsky was at in both Option A and Option B in the out years.
Mr. Chair, I think it's Kennedy. I think it's where we all wanted to go. So I just think it'll help clarify and it'll make sure that at least this topic is kept alive in the discussion about TAILS. Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Ready to vote on your amendment?
I'm ready. We could talk about it some more.
Does this have a number? No, it doesn't have a number.
What number, Mr. Chairman?
Okay, this is amendment number one.
Oh. Thanks, Mr. Chair. That's a good number.
All those in favor of amendment number one, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Amendment 10 is it up. Thank you. Representative Letts.
Let's come back to the Rochester. Oh, again. My recollection is dealing with page 57. My recollection from when they were here to testify, I don't know if there's someone here at this time who could reiterate this, but I had a question in connection with how they desired to spend the money that they were requesting. If my recollection is right, they did not request money for an endowment. Is there someone here who could clarify that question for me?
Welcome. Representative, for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Al DeBoer. I'm a community volunteer in Rochester and chair of the Higher Education Task Force. Representative Latz, the funding request of $3.2 million, $200,000, was for what's essentially planning to frame the governance and fiscal models, management things that need to be addressed in Rochester in terms of the higher education initiative. The $3 million is essentially for academic program development. There's language relating to endowment, but our sense is that essentially that money would go towards developing the academic programs that we envision for Rochester.
Mr. Chairman, that's consistent with my recollection of the discussion we had when the bill was before the committee and on its own Rochester bill. But could also, while you're up here, Mr. DeBoer, could you clarify for me, there's a provision in the current bill that allows some of that money to be used for related to academic facilities if needed as well. Were you initially requesting money for academic facilities out of the $3.2 million as well?
Representative Letts, no. There was no facilities request in this. I think that in terms of what the group, the commission is, or the development committee is intended to address, they're asked to address what facility needs might be required in the future, but there's no funding request for facilities.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that leaving those paragraphs 3 and 4 at lines 34 and 36, carrying on to the next page, in the bill now, that puts the cart before the horse in connection with any planning that's made for the Rochester, for a Rochester University or academic facility or whatever it turns out to be. And I'm particularly concerned about the use of any of this $3 million for an endowment to establish for an institution that at this time doesn't exist, and we don't know what form it will take, particularly if that $3 million was intended to be needed for purposes of preparing an academic program. I would, at this time, I would move to delete Article 4, Section 3 on page 57, lines 34 through 36, and then also delete line 1 on page 58. And I suppose then we have to put a period at the, replace the semicolon with a period at the end of line 33. That way this money, if available, would be used only for the purposes that the Rochester community initially sought. I think there probably needs to be a change also made back on page 4, lines 35 to 38, put a period after 2009 and delete the remainder of line 35 and then delete 36, 37, and 38. You don't need that special, if I understand it, right, there wouldn't need to be any carryover in connection with an endowment if there's no money available for an endowment.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. DeBoer, just wondering in connection with Representative Lass's amendment, line 34, provide funding related to economic facilities. Could that possibly be for rental space for the committee to do work in? Is that what it was intended to be, or what is that?
Representative Norris, Representative Erdahl, I don't think that that was contemplated. The $200,000 is money for this committee to utilize in whatever fashion they deem necessary, and maybe it would include something like that, but I don't think that that was contemplated.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's along that same line to Mr. DeBoer. I assume when I read line 34 that there would be some, possibly some spot that this group would be operating from, and they may have janitorial services, light bills, and other things that apportioned out to them that they would need to pay as far as academic facilities. This, I don't take it to mean this is capital improvement or construction funds. But I would think they would have to have something to operate somewhere. They might get to the point, even using this $3 million, they might get to the point that they need to be located somewhere and are going to have a portion share of cost. I don't know if Representative Lass is reading it that way or not.
Representative Lass. Mr. Chairman, Representative Cox, I think Representative Erdahl's question clarified that with the response from Mr. DeBoer, that they did not intend to have a need to rent space, or if they did, it would come out of the $200,000 planning portion. There already is some physical facility in Rochester out of which a number of academic activities or planning activities take place, as I understand it. But this specifically does say academic facilities, and it doesn't refer to the planning and development money that's identified, a purpose that's identified in line 30. So, I mean, I think if Mr. DeBoer's belief is the planning and development funds would be that $200,000 would be used for whatever they need for planning purposes, including, I suppose, if necessary, to lease space, if they would have to do that. It seems to be a lot of space available already to this group. Then the academic facilities, to me, has a different meaning.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Park.
What is that meaning, Representative Lass, when you're saying academic facilities? What are you concerned about, the meaning that you're attributing to it?
Classroom space, faculty offices,
construction
lounges, that kind of stuff. Construction or leasing or building out an existing building. But that would all be, I would think, in the implementation stage of whatever recommendations come out of the planning group that is anticipated to be working on this.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question and I have a comment after somebody answered my question. This language was not part of the original bill, is that right? Do you recall? In the draft of the Rochester bill? Was it in the bill?
It was.
Oh, it was. All right, then that's fine. I'll just comment about it. I think that we should be clear what we're doing. And I think if we're going to talk about sites and endowments and all that, I think when we support this part of the bill, we're saying that Rochester should have something more than it has now. And I think that if you're going to do that, then you should do that. I'm not so naive to think this is the end of the funding stream for this site. I know it's controversial. I know of my own reservations about it. But if we're going to move this forward to go, and in feminist to your thoughts too, maybe just to embellish your thoughts or just to move your thoughts a little further, Representative Lass, that if we're going to let them go forward with planning a thing, then we should give them the chance to do what they're going to do. And I don't think they're endowed $3 million, which will raise a great yield, like no money. But maybe they'll plan for an endowment. They'll plan to get grants from the big corporations down there. They'll set up kind of a placeholder fund. They would consider academic facilities. I'll risk a guess that in 5 or 8 years we're going to be having a bonding proposal about this project. And when I vote for it today, I'm voting thinking that's going to happen. And I hope that as this goes forward, that between Minsky and the U, that we can decide who's going to be the chief operator of this place, and that one of them will decide to embrace this as a stellar part of their system. That would be my desire. And so I guess I'm, if you have an amendment, I'm speaking against the amendment, but just to talk about the whole idea that, you know, Rochester is a thriving, growing part, and you know, we struggle to find enough money for higher ed in the first place, and I'm not happy with the target for the whole project, frankly. I think it's too low. But that's what we got right now. And we try to invest the money as best we can and show some leadership and all that. So I think that if this isn't how I'd plan a college or university in Rochester, but this is how we've been faced with the choice. It's been a discussion item for way before my time. And I think this has made it time to push the idea forward and see if they can come back with and not tie their hands so they can't plan for endowments and facilities and all that. So I think that if you're concerned about the whole session, then that would be a different discussion. But if you're going to go forward, I think that this language should remain as part of the proposal.
Representative Lass. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Response of Representative Abler. It's not my purpose in offering the amendment to bring the planning process to a screeching halt. But I do think that we're getting a little ahead of ourselves if we are giving them an incentive to only utilize $2 million of the $3 million for planning academic programs and to save $1 million, which would not cancel at the end of this appropriation, to begin an endowment. I'm not prepared right now to say that we ought to be spending Minnesota taxpayer dollars to start an endowment for a university in Rochester. I'm not even sure that I'm comfortable saying that we ought to endow a university out-of-state taxpayer funds to begin with. You know, endowments, at least in my own mind, tend to come from private contributions, corporate contributions, alums, others who have an interest in providing more long-term stable funding for a university outside of the sort of state appropriations process. Now, I don't know, maybe the U and Minsky have endowments that have been at least partially filled by state appropriations. But given the shortage of funds in Minnesota for higher education, I don't want right now to be saying we're going to endow a university in Rochester, an endowment which lasts for as long, in perpetuity, presumably, or until a facility were to end up closing and distributing its principal. So I say if we're going to make that decision at any point, let's make it after we get recommendations back from the committee that's being put together and see what it is that they want.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, maybe an amendment is in order to, we should vote on your amendment, first of all, I think, and maybe it would make you comfortable. On line 36 of page 57, if we talk about establish a framework for an endowment, I don't think that it's my desire either to take, I mean, then I can take this $3 million or even $10,000 of it and put it in an interest-bearing account and generate $8 a year. I don't know. So if that would get you to where you're comfortable, we can vote on your amendment or not, but maybe a way to get to where you want to go to is to not let them put $1 million in that fund. Well, 936 to say establish the framework for an endowment. So we would insert the word the framework for after establish on line 36. That might be assure me too that in these lean times. That's a suggestion, and you can do your amendment or like. And I think if your amendment doesn't pass, then I'll make that an amendment that I'll offer.
Members? Mr. Chairman, if I might just clarify,
Representative
Abler, I'm not averse to it necessarily, but I understand exactly what he's intending. Establishing a framework for an endowment, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that in their planning process under line 30, that they could have some papers drawn up to sort of establish what an endowment might consist of without actually putting any money into an endowment?
It's not my project. I'm just reading it just the same as you. So I think that's I don't know how to comment more. The staff had some suggestion. There was always some language in there about it. So
Members, I would speak against the original amendment with all due respect to the author, and urge us to vote that down and to proceed with the testimony. That's it. It's my wish. We'll see what happens.
Just wait till the end of the vote before you bring the gavel down.
Okay, all those in favor of the last amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Defeated. Alright. At this time, I'd like to invite testimony dealing with the state grant program. For those that wish to discuss that for a few minutes. Anyone in the audience care to come forward and share their thoughts? Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jeannie Herman with the Minnesota Career College Association.
Sally Michelson with the Minnesota Career College Association.
I'd like to call your attention to page 2, line 27. Our MECA member schools have serious concerns about the drastic decrease that's being made to the two-year tuition maximums. This has a far-reaching effect and can potentially harm 10,000 students in our state. Our neediest students, and those are our students with a zero EFC, meaning that their expected family contribution is zero, stand to lose nearly $1,300 a year in their grant eligibility. And there are two detrimental scenarios that could happen as a result of this. One, these students will choose not to attend college and receive the training and academic enrichment that will be critical to their future success. Or two, these students will take out additional loans and incur debt that will potentially be very difficult for them to manage in their future. Our member schools are committed to providing quality education and meeting workforce needs of this state, and this drastic reduction in funds for our students will dramatically affect our ability to best serve our students.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else care to testify in regards to the changes in the student grant program? Then I guess at this point we'll invite any comments to the bill. Representative Pulaski.
Chair, I'd like Dr. Sierra to come up and comment on genomics for a second, if you would. And if you could just give us an update on the used position on this, that might help clarify some of the discussion we've been having.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Frank Serra, Senior Vice President for Health Sciences. Also with me here today is Hugh Smith, the Chief Executive Chair of the Board for the Mayo Clinic. I would like to acknowledge the frustration I sensed in your discussion this morning around the funding of the UMayo partnership, and thank you for fixing up the tails. Although I got to say I don't quite understand all the addition and subtraction, but I do know Doug and I trust his numbers. But as I understand this, the University Mayo partnership is being funded in this bill with $15 million from the university's biannual request. And I have to take the position on behalf of the university that we simply can't accept this method of funding for the University of Mayo Partnership. Since it was conceived in January of 2003, this Minnesota Partnership for Biomedical Technology and Medical Genomics is a partnership of the state's two academic health centers to develop and commercialize intellectual property in health. That is to say, the partnership has always been identified as an economic development investment that will capture the value of health biology research in both the university and the Mayo Clinic and use it to contribute to the sustained growth of the private health cluster in the state of Minnesota. That's a matter of record in public testimony and in the business plan that was submitted. The potential of the partnership of driving economic value for Minnesota is the major reason why the Governor's Biosciences Council endorsed it as a major initiative for state funding. An outside consultant study also defined the potential partnership economic benefit, which has led to widespread support throughout state government and the public. I have a copy of that today. The mid-range projection for the investment of $70 million over 5 years is a return of $320 million and $4,500 jobs. The upper end estimate is $850 million and 11,000 new jobs. The value added for the entire state would be realized by both public and private sectors in urban and greater Minnesota. It is indeed a statewide economic development. This has always been a statewide economic development issue. The state's initial Phase 1 funding for the partnership was developed by the Economic Development Committees of the House and the Senate and appropriated through deed. In fact, the partnership's final business plan was submitted in October of 2003 to the House Jobs and Economic Development Committee as required by the 2003 Minnesota statute. Finally, the binding for construction of research space for the partnership in Rochester was an economic development, not a higher education project. I want to state clearly that the partnership effort falls outside of and is in addition to the core mission and work of the university. This project was never intended to be an education project that would be funded as a component of the University of Minnesota's state appropriation. This is an equal partnership between the Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota. And my colleague Dr. Heath Smith's presence here today is a testament to the fact that this partnership cannot be built on the back of a weakened University of Minnesota. Taking this $15 million over the next biennium from the university's appropriation would severely impede the university's academic initiatives as they are listed in the university's biennial request, and which we internally call the presidential initiatives. These are neurosciences, biomedical sciences, etc. The university's budget request is to support its academic programs. The UMayo partnership funding is for economic development. I cannot accept this method of funding the UMayo partnership on behalf of the university. I think my colleague, Dr. Hugh Smith, would like to make some comments also, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Smith. Mr. Chair, members of the Higher Ed Finance Committee, I am Chair of the Board of Governors of Mayo Clinic Rochester, and up until late yesterday, I did not anticipate being here today. I'm sure, just listening to your discussions earlier today, you probably had the same question, why are we here? And I'm here for several reasons. The first is that the concerns expressed by the university are not unilateral. The concerns expressed by Frank, Sarah, are in fact the concerns expressed by the Mayo University Partnership. We have a significantly important thing going here. And it is a concern to Mayo if the university is impaired as a partner in going forward with these efforts. As Frank has indicated, this bill in higher ed erodes the university. It puts them in a very difficult position and potentially erodes the partnership funding. This started, as you indicated, under economic development in response to a question that Representative Abrams asked earlier. We have testified, I believe, four times in jobs and higher economic development. We sense some concern about state funding of research. And I would just indicate that Mayo and the university are, in essence, the upstream engines for the biotechnology genomics pipeline. Research is important in higher ed, higher tech corporations and industries. Medtronic did not grow to where they are without R&D. We are for research. So where we are is there's some urgency to this. The Mayo and University collaboration is unique. This public-private partnership does not exist in any other state. It has been cited as a novel approach for leveraging the new biology and making an impact in terms of jobs and economic development in this state. We have a head start, but it's being eroded by other states aggressively funding in this area. And so I would just say we appreciate your concerns. I particularly appreciate the efforts today to fix the tails on the university budget in the out years, and we're hopeful that we can get this to a positive conclusion in this legislative session. Thank you.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Abrams.
It's not a question because I agree with the testifiers. I do have some advice for the chair and for members, particularly of the majority caucus, and it's based upon a little bit of experience around here. When a mistake is made, or when something slips through the cracks, or when a decision is made, I think it is far better to stand up and take responsibility for that decision. That was the reason that I made those comments earlier. And I would certainly hope that as this bill goes through the Ways and Means Committee and goes through the process, that that this item does get fixed. The university and Mayo entered into this for all the right reasons. All the right reasons. 2 years ago, I went down to Mayo and learned a great deal about the genomics project, a great deal about the supercomputer project down there. And it seemed to be the thing that we've been trying to encourage for a number of years, to have the university think outside the box, to collaborate, etc. And all of a sudden, at the 11th hour, where basically the decision came down, not from you, Mr. Chairman, but from others, that the university, to use former Representative Milbert's phrase, was being rung up for doing the right thing. And I would certainly hope that as this bill moves forward, and you know, even if it's not Ways and Means, at least at conference committee time, that we encourage this sort of collaboration and not penalize those who come forward basically doing what I think a number of people a whole lot brighter than me have said that they ought to be doing for a long time. So again, I congratulate the University of Mayo for entering into the project. I think you're right on this issue, and we're going to try to fix it. Thank you.
Representative Opatz.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Abrams, and I think we need to be careful about handling this correctly. However, it's certainly conceivable that the targets that this this committee was given could have been appropriated in a slightly different way, for example, to better recognize the real growth in enrollment of MinSCU and the University of Minnesota. It's not inconceivable, for example, that rather than $202 million for the University of Minnesota might have been $187, $15 million less, and the MinSCU appropriation rather than $202 could have been $217, still well below a recognition of their enrollment. So while I want to, you know, I appreciate that the way this has happened, and I think it hasn't happened well, On the other hand, I think those of us who are also concerned about what's happening to the Minsky system need to recognize that, unlike the University of Minnesota, whose enrollment was entirely recognized and then provided additional resources, the Minsky system felt was given far short of their enrollment adjustment, not to mention nothing and above that for other initiatives. So.
I don't see any other questions at this time, so thank you both for...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Anyone else in the audience that would like to come forward at this time? One more time? Okay. I think unless any other members have questions at this point, we're ready to vote. I ask for a roll call vote. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Thank you. I'll be real brief. I just, first of all, I want to thank you for running the committee the way you did this year. You gave our, as far as I can tell, you gave all of us a fair shot at having our bills heard here. Obviously, I'm disappointed that there are a number of bills that I and others have offered that are not in this bill, and I understand that part of that has to do with the hand that you were dealt with, that this committee was dealt with in terms of the targets and some of the unique ways, if you will, that we're budgeting this year. I won't be supporting the bill for a number of reasons, including a little bit of what Representative Wolpatz just talked about in terms of the Minsky system. But I wanted to make sure that, at least that I expressed to you, that a couple of things. One is, again, appreciate how you've handled ability to provide some education here for everyone, even about here bills that are not in here. I suspect that some of these bills will be in the Senate bill, and to the degree that our members are informed about those provisions, I think that was a good expenditure of our time. I particularly want to encourage the chair and members as they go forward to revisit the issue of college access. There were a couple of proposals, both a Minsky and a private college proposal, that was before us that addressed, I think, a pretty important aspect of encouraging young people to move on to pursue higher education. And I think it's the kind of work that frankly needs to be, that we need to be about as much as we need to be about encouraging those students who are already greatly motivated and well prepared to remain in our higher ed systems. I really think it's important for us to strike a balance there. So, Mr. Chair, I just want to take a few minutes to express my thoughts before I voted on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Opatz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I've expressed some of my concerns about the bill, and I think the two issues that stand out for me particularly are, one is making some progress, but not handling the enrollment adjustment entirely, and we've talked a little bit about that. The other piece, along Representative Pawlowski's concerns about the fencing, that we've gone a little further than I would like to see us in terms of carving out pieces that have to be distributed in some way other than straight up on the allocation formula, and particularly how well the centers of excellence, how well that's going to be managed. I think there's some problems with that. But I think there's another side of this, and I think I need to say it. We've had some rough years in higher education and funding. I think the last time around it was a significant, almost $400 million reduction in appropriations. And I'm looking at these numbers here. $208 million of additional spending under Option A and perhaps as much as $234 million, representing for the University of Minnesota about 11.5% increase under Option A and 12.5% increase under Option B, and for the Minsky system, 8.5% to 9.5%, depending on the option. I don't recall in my time here, and maybe it's happened, and I'm sure someone will correct me, that I've ever had the opportunity to vote for a $200+ million appropriation for higher education, certainly not in my recent memory. It doesn't go all of the way to correcting the problem of the last go-around, but I think it's unfair to look at that $200+ million and suggest that it isn't doesn't go a significant way to improving the lot for higher education. I look at my two, I have two of the largest institutions in the Minsky system in my district, and assuming that the $200+ million or the $102 million for Minsky were distributed sort of along the lines of the allocation model, that's, you know, that's $10 million for St. Cloud State University, and maybe $2 million for St. Cloud Technical College. That's, I'm not getting calls from those folks saying this is a bad bill, don't vote for it. Those are real dollars, but at the same time I recognize that this tuition issue is a big one, and I hope that we can work with the systems to hold down those tuition. But I'm going to vote in favor of this bill today because I think this is a real change. In fact, I understand, and at some risk of getting in an argument with Representative Abrams, we've had testifiers who've come forward and talked about this steady decline in the percent of the state's budget appropriated to higher education. And my understanding that for the first time in maybe 15 years or more, that will turn around. That this budget, the targets in the House, will actually see for the first time in a generation the percentage of the state budget appropriated for higher education actually stopping that decline and slightly increasing. So for those reasons, in addition to some language issues that I've been working on for a number of years, I'm going to vote in favor of the bill.
Representative Pelosi?
Mr. Chair, members, I do recall a time when we did fund the need in higher education. I recall a time in the last year of Governor Arne Carlson's administration where this body put together a bill in the off year, $60 million over the governor's request, and he signed the bill. But I don't recall a time ever where we had double-digit increases in tuition year after year after year. And testimony today indicates that, again, in the next two-year cycle, it is highly likely we will again have double-digit increases in tuition. We have put almost all of the funding of higher education on the backs of the students. And we did it in 2003 by saying we would move money from both the University of Minnesota and the Minsky base, a base cut of almost $200 million to each system, and we would move that money over to the finance department to balance the budget. The students then would get the double-digit increases in tuition, and they would get nothing for it. Nothing. Not another class, not another professor, not an expansion of program, whether it be nursing or education or genomics or anything else. We would get nothing because that money was being moved to balance the budget. I never have recalled a time in my 19 years here where we have done that. Double-digit increases, year after year after year. So I cannot support this bill. I wish I could, but I cannot. The need is there. It has been demonstrated particularly by the University of Minnesota. President Brunix is perhaps the best voice I have heard in the last 2 years on the need and on what the U has done. And he has been in our face. He has repeatedly told us that this is what the university needs to do. They're even at the point at the university where they are eliminating entire colleges in order to focus on what is the core mission of the university research. So I wish I could vote for the bill, but I can't.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, if I might add my voice of concern, and through the hearing today, on more than one occasion, I raised the question of tuition. You know, I would like to frame it a little differently, but when we talked about what happened last biennium, $380 million in cuts, and I've been told that higher education in the state of Minnesota was hit harder with reductions than virtually any state in the union. And a lot has been made by the administration about, I think he calls it an 8% increase, but when you take $400 million away, or $380, and you give roughly half of it back, and then you talk as though that were an 8% increase, I think is really clouding the discussion. When Representative Pawlowski talks about the double-digit increases in tuition, my recollection was that that was 28% to 30% last biennium. The tuition went up, depending on which system. And that's before I think we even compounded. But be that as it may, we're now talking, as we have testimony here today, 8% to 10% for Minsky, and I think we heard earlier that it probably would be close to double digit at the University of Minnesota as well. So probably in that same general range. And some of you have heard me tell the story before, but years ago when I first became chair of this division, there was a fellow by the name of Howard Smith who had been the chair earlier. I think at least one person in the audience may remember Howard and worked with him. But at any rate, he and I had a discussion, and he talked about the importance of higher education and the investment in our future. And he used an old farm phrase, you have to be careful you're not eating your seed corn. And I think that's what's happening in Minnesota, whether we're talking K-12 education or higher education. And I really have a lot of concern about the future and what these investments, the lack of investments, mean in terms of the future of the state. The one place where there seems to be broad consensus among the citizens of the state of Minnesota is that the way we keep the state strong, the way we provide opportunity, is by investing in education. And I don't think we're doing it here today in spite of that $200 million increase, because I think we have to look at it more in terms of not just this biennium, but the past biennium. And the other issue, some of us here are on the Ways and Means Committee, and we know that in the out biennium we're again faced with another $1.2 billion shortfall. And the question I pose then is, if we continue down this road of more and more tuition and not appropriately investing in education, where we're going to be when we've spent the better part of a decade in underfunding our colleges and universities. So I guess you might speculate that when my name is called, it'll be a no vote, and that's correct.
Could have surprised us. Thank you.
I'm looking forward, Mr. Chairman, to the day when I can vote for, to the day when I can vote for a higher ed bill.
Representative Lance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you're standing on the ground and you dig a 10-foot hole, and then the ground is lifted, someone puts a layer, another foot or two of layer of dirt on top of the ground, and you take 3 feet of dirt, you dump it back into the hole, you're still many feet below ground level. And that's really what this bill is doing. We dug a $400 million hole in higher education in the last biennium. The U of Minsky took a disproportionate share of the cuts in the last biennium, because they were one of the few budget categories that had the availability of other sources of revenue to make up for some of those cuts, which was to say the students and their families in the form of tuition and fees. Make no mistake about it, a tuition increase, or a budget that depends upon a tuition increase to help fund higher education, certainly at this levels, is a tax increase on students and their families that are paying for their higher education. You can spell it T-U-I-T-I-O-N, but it really means T-A-X. And I'm afraid that at this level of funding that we are simply continuing to manage decline in the state's commitment to higher education rather than reinvigorating higher education in Minnesota. I'm not comfortable being a part of that, and so I will be voting against this bill.
Representative Abel. Well, not to belabor it, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the, I wanted to actually echo Representative Mariani on your kindness as a chair and giving me hearings on bills that I thought deserved an airing, and for that I think that was a lot of the issues were well aired, and the challenges are well known to you. And I think just to, so thank you for that. I think in the context of all of it, I think Representative Opat said it pretty well. There's a positive fiscal note on this bill, a couple hundred million dollars. I wish there were more, but it's a good number. Remembering in the state fiscal condition, whatever you think about taxes or not, we're short $234 million in this biennium. And that's not play money. That's real money. And so I think we face challenges as members, and we have to make some choices. And I think one of the choices we made in a positive way is to add money into this department when other departments are going to be cut. And I think this is a priority for me. It's a priority for most members, all the members in this committee. And it's a priority for our constituencies. And so this will go out of here. There'll be some tweaks. It won't come back just this way. So I want to commend the chair and his efforts for getting this much money put into the target even at the beginning and for what will happen at the end. So thank you.
Thank you, members. I would just have to add that as a first-time chair, this has been a good experience for me. However the vote goes, I'm I guess appreciative of the opportunity to be here. And I guess I commend all of you for, I've referred to often that this was a hand-picked committee, and it was. But I got a good choice of a balance here, I think, among the members. So I thank you for the opportunity. Before we vote, however, I'd also like to thank the staff who have been with us over the weeks, and Sarah, thank you, and Nancy from the DFL side, thank you. Mary Peterson, back in the corner. Also, Ms. Novak and Mary. Mike, and Doug. And this one, yeah. It made my job a lot easier, and appreciate that. And to the audience, thank you for faithfully coming. That's been nice to have people in the audience. And thank you for your testimony over the weeks. At this time, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 1385, as amended, be passed and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And we'll call for the roll.
Nornes.
Yes.
Abler.
Yes.
Abrams.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Cox.
Yes.
Dempsey.
Yes.
Eastland.
Yes.
Latz.
No.
Mariani.
No.
Opat.
Yes.
Pulaski.
No.
Berdahl.
Yes.
Okay, vote of 8 in favor and 4 no's, so the bill is approved and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you very much.